Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Hour of Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm your host, Paul Bullivant. And in today's episode, we're looking at plumbing and heating in a builder's merchant. And I'm delighted to be joined for the first time ever by three guests. And my three guests are Simon Parker.
Morning.
And Matt Binney.
Morning.
Well done. Remembered your lines. And John Newstone.
Morning.
Well done. So, gentlemen, shall we just start by doing a little introduction from each? Obvious, so the audience know who you are.
Okay.
Simon, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I started my career way back in 1987. I started working at a company called Danby's, which my dad was a manager of. I was there 13 years, moved along, went to be rep. From there on, my father retired and I then decided it was time to move on myself. I went to work for MKM for 3 or 4 years where I met a good friend of mine, which then he moved to Jewson's and I followed with him. And in turn from there, I went on to be manager of Graham's in Louth and then in Grimsby, and then decided I need a career change again. So I then went on to work for a manufacturer for a year, which didn't really work out for me.
Who was what manufacturer?
It was Vakera.
Okay.
Then I decided I want to go back into merchanting. I then went to work for PTS for, I think, probably about 12 years or so, and decided that I needed to change again. And I started at Howarth in 2016.
Nice. So you've had a lifetime in
merchanting. Yeah, I've worked for independents and I've worked for big merchants. Well, I love working for an independent.
All right, nice. That's good. And you're the plumbing heating manager
I'm plumbing heating manager at Grimsby.
At Grimsby Batch. Okay. Matt? So I started an apprenticeship at PTS years ago, did that for 4 weeks, absolutely loved it, loved the environment, then went to work as an apprentice plumber. A customer who still deals with me now to this day, did a couple of years, weren't really my thing. Oh, not very good on the tools.
What did you like about the tools?
I think when you wait, like every day you wake up, I just couldn't see myself doing it. I just struggled with it. So I had a couple of different jobs in between. And then I ended up working for Plumbase, did a few years there, then went to work for an independent, and then went back to Plumbase as a rep. So I was looking after 4 or 5 branches. And then again, I always thought I need to be back behind a counter. I always felt I wanted to be talking to customers face to face. In a merchant, and I just found it a bit tricky, just going out on the road, found it a bit lonely. So then I ended up, getting through to Hour of Timber. I was contacting you.
It's all my fault you've been
doing. Yeah, it's all your fault. Yeah.
I apologise for that.
six years now at Barnsley Branch now.
What led you to plumbing and heating to begin with?
My dad worked for a boiler manufacturer.
Well, I was edgy to what?
I know.
You're going to mention VR back.
Yeah, well done. So my dad, John Biddy, worked for Alpha for 20 odd years, and he worked for British Gas as well prior to that. So plumbing and heating's always been in our household. And then before I went to Plumbase, there was obviously a job opening there for one of the customers told me, and my dad told me about it. And I just thought I would need to get myself back into it. It always excited me to do it. So then obviously got full to that. So I never looked back since.
So plumbing's in your blood because of your dad.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And if you're watching, John, I can't believe I'm sat here talking to your son. Reeling back all those years to half the boilers.
He will be watching this when this comes out. So yeah.
Okay, that's good. John, finishes off.
So I'm the category manager, plumbing and heating category manager for Howarth Timber. I've worked in the plumbing and heating merchant industry for approximately 42 years. I've worked for independent merchants and I've worked for national merchants in various positions. Started off as trade counter guy, worked my way up to branch manager. And then I've also had an operational role as well with Plumbase, where I was based in the Midlands. And I looked after branches in the Midlands and the Southwest. There was 22 branches in total. Unfortunately, I was made redundant from that position and didn't quite know what to do next, really, with my career. And then the opportunity came, which sounded really interesting, to introduce plumbing and heating to a builder's merchants. And the rest is history. Here I am. I've been here 11 years, thoroughly enjoyed it every single year that I've been here. And hopefully there's more to come.
Nice. Can I just touch on your Fortis role? Fascinating. Which
yes. So Fortis, for those that don't know, is our buying group for the business. I've been a category director now within Fortis for coming up to 4 years now. When I first joined as CD, I looked after heating products for the buying group. And now I currently look after all the plumbing products, circa £15 million turnover with the buying group. And I thoroughly enjoy that too.
That's good. So, years in the industry?
44.
Probably 12 years now.
42 plus.
So thick end of 100 years of experience. So you know a lot about plumbing and heating between you and.
Yeah.
Right, let's see what you know about plumbing and heating. I thought all we'd do is we'd give you a little plumbing and heating test just to see how knowledgeable you really are. We have done other little segments like this with other episodes we've done, particularly when we've done branches and we've talked about the towns that the branch operates from. But because you're all from different towns, I didn't think that was appropriate, so I've got a plumbing test, okay? And with all this experience, I'd expect you to be really good at this. So, John, first question to you. Which of these now discontinued sanitary ware colours never actually existed? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, honeysuckle. Number two, whisper grey. Number three, penthouse blue. And number four, pampers. Which one never actually existed?
Penthouse blue, I believe.
Correct. Explain why that didn't exist.
I'm not really sure why it didn't exist. It just, I think it was a colour that was mentioned once, well, back in the day, but never actually got to market.
So, when I started, there were two ideal standard colours that I'll always remember because they were hideous. Penthouse red and Bermuda blue.
Yeah.
So I'd mash the two up. And there were two horrible dark colours. And why I never have them in a bath,
yeah,
I would never know, because it's just destined to live horrible, you know, mark lines. So.
I remember back in the day when I used to deal with house builders, national house builders, and back in the day, they used to give the new homeowner a choice of colour, and it was absolutely horrendous to stock every single colour.
See,
and there was always one that wanted that unusual colour that was on 6 weeks delivery lead time.
See, it's weird because I think when I started, I saw probably like the back end of it where you could, there were a couple of suppliers you could actually buy, you know, buy some of all the different colours, And you'd be surprised, I've sold a couple of them and it's like, obviously the customers didn't want to change anything in the bathroom, but they just said, oh, we want to keep this, you know, we want to keep the colour scheme if we can still get it. You cover, I think they've soon now gone out of business.
The world's really changed.
Yeah,
it's our share, we know everything's wide, it makes it easier for us. Right. Simon. When was the first gas boiler installed? Was it 1868, 1908, or 1948?
1908.
Okay. Wrong.
No.
The answer is 1868.
Right.
And a fact for you, Richard Baxendale, who was the founder of Baxi. Yeah. First patented a boiler in 1866.
For you're right.
So that's one correct, one failure. Yeah, Nat, there's one for you now.
Oh,
no pressure.
No
pressure.
It's all right, it's fine.
Who patented the first flushing toilet? Was it Sir John Harrington, Alexander Cummings, or Thomas Crapper? And no sniggering.
First one.
Sir John Harrington,
yeah.
No, that's another failure. Unfortunately, the correct answer was Alexander Cummings, who patented the first toilet in 1775.
Oh, no.
But some interesting history around Sir John Harrington. He invented a flushy toilet in 1596 for Queen Elizabeth I, but she refused to use it because it was too noisy.
Oh,
so there you have it. So we've got a history lesson there, as well as learning about what we're going to
do. And we've got two wrong as well. Which,
yeah.
Yeah, forbid. We're done plumbing.
John thought.
Thomas Crapper is a little bit of useless information for you. Thomas Crapper. He did invent something. He invented the drainage system in London to facilitate the flushing toilet.
Oh, did he?
And if you walk around London now, especially in Westminster, you'll see drain covers that say Thomas Crapper.
Good.
So there's another bit of useless if, right,
John?
Is that on your? I bet you I've got that on your business. You could take over as nursing duties now.
Well, back in the day, you see, when you didn't have a drainage system, you had a wooden hut in the back garden, and you just moved it around the garden. And then they planted vegetables in there and you ate the vegetables. So that ain't pretty good, is it?
I think we need to move on from now. So you were around in that time?
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Right, so we've introduced ourselves. We've realised that your two's knowledge of plumbing is LA Paul, and it's amazing that you managed to hold on to a job for so long.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to the intelligent one of the three of you.
I would say, yeah.
The least stupid of the three. And perhaps you could give us a quick history of how plumbing and heating ended up in a timber merchant.
I think the idea was born out of a conference that the business had, obviously before my time. I think they had their annual conference. I think Nick had an idea that it would be good to introduce plumbing and heating. I think he looked for buy-in from various branch managers, and the idea was born. The problem with it was that they didn't have the expertise within the business to move that forward. So I was employed to carry that forward. But it already did have plumbing and heating in about five branches, I think, when I joined the business. Turnover was around about 700,000 from those five branches. Rochbale was one of them. Corby was another one. So there were either ends of the country. Fast forward 11 years, when we're now just over 7.5 million. Our turnover with plumbing and heating, and we've got it in 16 branches.
And how did you get it into all those branches? Was it everybody all at once, or was it a gradual rollout?
When I had my second interview with Nick and a guy called Jason Rothwell at the time, he asked me what my plan was and how I was going to do it. And the first thing that I was quite keen on is how big a space we had to work with, because if you remember, they're all bolt-ons to our branches, not standalones. So we decided that we'd only put plumbing and heating in branches where it fitted correctly. We could put a decent stock range in there, and we were seen to be serious about it, because it's a hard sell to sell plumbing and heating in a builder's merchant, which I'm sure you'll
touch on that.
We didn't want to fall at the first hurdle by not having the stock that a customer wanted. So we wanted a good, decent stock profile, which I think we've got. And it expands every single year with new products.
And so you just roll through a branch at a time rather than trying to wait 10 in a year.
Yeah. If it won't fit properly, we won't even entertain it.
What will fail? What are the biggest challenges you faced?
I think the biggest challenge is obviously managers have come and gone within the business. So an element of my role is to win hearts and minds with branch managers, because they're employed to sell building and timber products. They don't kind of get the plumbing scene. So part of the obstacle that you have to get over is winning the confidence of the branch manager that it's the right thing to do, and it'll add something at the front end, and it'll add margin to the bottom line.
But a majority open.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm blessed even today to work with an incredible people. We've got some very talented branch managers. They're all easygoing. If you've got an idea to make them more money, then they're all ears. They'll snap your hands off. And so a lot of it was quite easy to do. But there is always going to be doubting Thomases. I don't see that as a hurdle. I see that as a challenge. Yeah. And yeah, we've got in 16 branches and it works fairly well.
Excellent. Right, let's come on to back to you two then. And John's touched on it, that it is quite a challenge selling plumbing from a builder's merchant.
Yeah.
I think it always has been. My background was from a mixed merchants, and there are always the challenges there of getting heavy side managers into light side. Do you want to just talk us through like the day in the life of a plumbing manager in a builder's merchant? What are the challenges? What makes it difficult? What do you like about it? Because you've both worked in specialist plumbers merchants and builder's merchants. Just give us an overview of the day in the life.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the morning, it's first thing in the morning, I mean, at 7 a.m, it's getting people through the door. You're talking to people, you've got, you know, we're organising deliveries, we're going out delivering as well, we're taking stock off, and you're talking to people on the phone, And when people come in, interact with people like your plumbers, and you're getting your builders, finding your builders who does the plumbing, and just getting on the side. And I think a good part of the branch where we are is the customers come in, they have a bit of banter with us, and you can talk to them, and they trust you.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. And once they trust you, they'll trust you with other things. And we do, you know, we do look after people. And I think working for an independent, I think we're more flexible.
Yeah, okay. Now, just touching on what Simon said, really, just think, like, first off in the morning, even with sorting deliveries, is probably our most busiest time.
Yeah,
I would say, like, you know, most of the morning, anything from 7 up to 10 o'clock in the morning, it can be quite mental with people trying to collect and then trying to sort deliveries out. Even though we are, it is a little bit different. I think some branches might have their own dedicated fleet for plumbing, but in our, like in Barnes's case, we have two high abs and a flatbed. So we have to kind of, like, you know, tag along onto and get the deliveries in. But that's fine. Obviously, we've got great drivers will help out with us on that. But I think, like, normally day by day, what Simon said with builders, a lot of them will come in. And again, because of that element of trust is there. And there's, you know, a lot of the time they will ask for your assistance. They'll ask for what you'll think on, you know, on certain things, or can I fit this, or what do you recommend? So it's really good. So you kind of can, you can, like, guide them a lot, you know, a lot more easier. And I think as well is because we are an independent, we are family run independent, we haven't got a lot of that red tape. We can, the number one focus I think we've got is we know we can look after the customers first, and that's the most important thing. And that's what I think me and Simon especially love doing about the job the most.
How does it work with, so you get a builder or a joiner come in and all the other guys are busy. Do you go and serve those guys?
We just serve. It's all hands of pump in the morning. We all get up there, we all serve, and it doesn't matter whether you're a builder, bricky, trade, retail. Everybody's trapped the same, and that's what we do.
Yeah, we'll assist what we can do. Obviously, my building knowledge, you know, is kind of basic on that, but I can still do quite a few tickets and can.
So you can do all the bases. You can do cement, plasterboard,
Insulation. So I can still do that and can help out. Even, like I say, even with some of the plumbers as well, they might ask for building stuff. I can still support them best I can. If not, you know, we've got plenty of sales stuff inside who can help.
Does it ever frustrate your specialist plumber customers if they've come in to see you and you're busy serving other trades?
We've got the end of the counter is sort of, it's the plumbing end of things, but we serve everybody there, but the plumbers do tend to come to the end of the counter, but they'll come in, they'll have a coffee, so they don't mind waiting a minute or two.
Sometimes they'll, if I'm in office, which 90% of the time I'm probably in there, they'll just bypass and they'll just come around and they'll just say, I'm just here to see Matt, or like I said, we've got Jack who works for me, they'll just, they'll go to see Jack, go see me. So, you know, that is, you know, which I don't mind if they want to, as long as they've cleared it with, because obviously sometimes if people are in a queue or if they've not said anything, just walk through, I suppose they're not like it. But I think the longer I've been here, I think at the start, I think people probably were a little bit annoyed, but now they understand. I think the customers are, you know, a lot more, you know, they don't mind. They'll get a coffee. They'll probably go and have a look, see if they can get some other bits and bobs. So
they're all quite realistic.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, absolutely.
What about the delivery side of things? So if you've got
me and Paul, we've got a dedicated vehicle for plumbing, heating, bathrooms and kitchens.
And you two would do the delivery?
Yeah. Yeah. Paul tends to do a lot of the delivering, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you don't have your own vehicle?
No. So the flatbed, which our driver Don uses, he'll deliver building and plumbing with that, and kitchens as well. So we can, and to be fair, we can cope with that, you know, as of now. So we're absolutely fine. I think the longer down the line, we'll probably hopefully look at his own dedicated, but for now, we can cope with that. And to be fair, I think it's key for us as well. The drivers probably will probably see the customer more than what we do. So, And then they all get on with
with drivers at our place. So, and that's a really good feeling as well. They'll not just take it off. They'll give them a hand or assist them. So, you know, that's a really big help as well. Especially
so in both of your branches, plumbing and heating will be the third biggest department in the branch. You have timber and building.
Yeah.
Similar kind of size.
Yeah.
And then plumbing and heating will be a reasonable chunk smaller. So you're the kind of the babies of the...
Yeah, we are.
Does that cause you any frustrations?
I don't really think so. I mean, we do what we do. Right. I mean, we talk. The good thing is we talk between... So certainly me and Matt talk.
Yeah.
And you can always iron things out or...
Yeah, of course. I think the key thing is as well is, from my point of view, Tom, my branch manager, supports plumbing and he does assist me and Jack there massively. But he also allows us to trade with so much flexibility and also not kind of just leave you to one side, but he'll trust you just to run it how you see fit and stepping up and put his things across, which helps a lot massively because we are like the third like smallest thing in the branch. You know, there's the timber side, there's the building side, and then obviously there's the transport day to day running the branch. We kind of can get a little bit lost in that, but that's not a bad thing. You know, as long as you see we're ticking over doing the sales and looking after things, then
I mean, that's all we want.
Andy's good with us. I run things by him and just, you know, you're happy to get on with it. He sees what we're doing and he's happy. So it's great. And I've got a good guy working with me, Paul, as well.
Yeah, and same with me. I've got Jack, young lad who's coming up to about a year and a half now. And so he's getting his teeth stuck into everything, which is really good. So, and Tom, I can go to Tom and ask him for things. Yeah, he does fire some. Yeah, he does fire some banter back at me when I ask him things.
That's all a lot of time.
Which is not like him. So I get it quite a lot. But the good thing is you know, he's there. I also do, like we were saying about touching my everything on the every side, like with the stock taking and that side, I do a lot of work on that as well. So I help on that side.
So you play a full part?
Yeah.
What about you, John? Do you have any frustrations? With it being plumbing in a builder's merchant?
Yeah, like I say, it's a hard sell enticing a plumber to come to a builder's merchant to buy plumbing and heating products because nowhere above our door does it say plumbing and heating. It's building and timber merchant. And that's where we rely on our people. You know, we do employ specialist people that have been in the industry for a considerable amount of time. And, you know, that works really, really well. And, long may that continue.
We've got two questions, Ron, though.
Producer Dave would be able to edit that.
Yeah.
Edit that. As long as you talk nice to. Okay, so picking up that point about it's sometimes been a hard sell plumbing and heating in a builder's merchant. And question to you two, you chip in as you want. Why on earth would a plumber or heating engineer choose to come to a mixed builders merchant rather than another specialist? Because there's lots of good specialists out.
Yes.
There's lots of good specialists out there. What is it that you think attracts?
I think we're a one-stop shop. We've got everything that they need for a bit of wood for a back of a boiler or something like that. Put it on the wall for a bathroom. We've got plasterboard. We've got the things for the leveling floors. We've got chipboard.
Yeah.
We've got everything there that you need. And that's good. And people like that, they can just come in and get everything they need and go rather than having to run around different places for different things.
I think like when I started, a lot of the customers were a bit like, I didn't know you do plumbing. They still get that every now and again, but not as much as when I first started, even though there was loads of plumbing stock. But we're like, still, you know, because as John said, it's not plastered, on that. But when customers have that initial, you know, that initial thing, and then they get to see what we do, it's like, so for example, like one of my customers has been buying, as an example, he picked up part of a bathroom yesterday. But he's picked up all the plasterboard, chipboard, and some timber as well for it. Now, before, he'd either leave it to his joiner to get that, but he can go get that and then get all his other stuff. So that one-stop shop thing is brilliant. He can go into the yard, get what he needs, come in and see himself or Jack, get what he needs, and that's it. I think customers, you know, especially the older ones would always go, had always leaned towards the specialist plumbing merchants. But I think what we found, me and Si, on it is a lot of it from the beginning were probably just down to, like, they wanted to deal with myself or, yeah, like, with Si, just wanted
to deal. It's but, people do.
But then, you know, that kind of goes away. They get to see what else we do.
Yeah.
I know every branch is different. They've all got different bits of stock and that, but...
You know, the amount of time you get people say, oh, how a timber? I didn't know you did.
Yeah.
You know, it's like eating.
It's like, for example, we did like an underfloor heating like last year, but we needed some particular like leveling compound for it, right? Now, the supplier didn't do it, but Alf's got two or three really big suppliers who do all that sort of items. And we could just go to them and go, look, this is what we've got and we need it to do all this. Like, yeah, you can buy it off us and do it. So like, in a way, you know, the branch, we benefited from that and the branch did as well. And we want that, you know, so there's a lot of sales, what you would think you'd lose out, but you gain from that.
So do you think the trade has changed slightly over the years in terms of a plumbing and engineer now will do a lot of the ancillary?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, more now. Probably more like the bathroom fitters. It used to be a heating engineer, plumber, but they tend to do now everything. They seem to take on board doing the ripping the walls off, plastering again. They're doing all that. Whereas years ago, it would be a fitting boilers and that, you know, you're fitting a bathroom, but the bathrooms now are more, people like more, they like more design. So things are getting, people are doing more specialist things. You're getting specialist bathroom fitters. So that's the way it's going, yeah.
I think our strategy has always been, where customers are concerned, it's always been the builder. That was our target audience right from the get-go and still is today. I think, you know, the trust's there. And if they trust us to buy timber and building products and why not trust us to buy plumbing and heating, they just go hand in hand. And the other thing is that the credit facility is in place, if that's the way they want to trade with us. So... we know them well. So, you know, it's win-win for us, really.
Yes.
Do you get, what weaknesses do our customers think we have? But I don't mean particularly the tower timber, I mean we're dealing with a builder's merchant. Do you get any feedback to say?
Probably only things are, obviously, before I had Jack working with me, when it was just myself, if I weren't there for on holiday or far away from the office, I usually found that they just didn't feel comfortable dealing with anybody else, and obviously some people's knowledge probably wasn't there for what they needed, and they just felt a bit like they wanted to put the work for themselves, but they were just a bit uneasy. So I think that's one of the main things from what I've seen from Barnsley's side. Or what you,
I mean, I think, yeah, it probably was when I first started there, I was on my own, so if I wasn't there, people would struggle coming in thinking, oh, what can I do? I'll leave it, I'll go somewhere else. But I think with them coming in now, they have confidence because if I'm not there, Paul's there, all the other members of staff there, and that, you know, they're capable of serving, doing bits and pieces for them.
When we built it up, like, I've been 6 years, you've been how many years?
Nine.
So we built it up enough, and obviously the other members of staff, you know, they've helped, obviously, before, and some of the guys in the yard when they've took deliveries and they've checked them up. So, you know what I mean? Everyone's getting a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, okay. So to begin with, it's around people. People who trade with people. They like the relationship.
Yeah, quite.
They have some attention.
Yeah.
But when we start off, it tends to be one. So when you're on holiday, you're not there.
Yeah, yeah.
It collapses. But you build that up. You've got an assistant with you both.
Yeah.
You've got the other members of staff in the other
departments. Yeah, of course.
You. That's kind of doing that. Are there any other negatives that people throw at you? About things like stock range?
That were from the beginning. I think at least first couple of years, a lot of people were still like, you know, you're not getting this, you're not getting that. But again, the thing is, when you're trying to grow your customer base, you know, you're trying to, you're going from there to there to there to trying to find out, you know, what you should always keep in. So, and it's like now as product range still keeps growing and changing. So I think from first couple of years, a lot of people say, no, you don't carry enough in, or you should really keep this in. Sometimes you can miss a trick, but I think that's like in specialists.
Yeah,
I think with specialists, again, the industry changes all the time. So you go from, even from like next month, something could radically change. So, and it's trying to keep up.
And it's just evolving.
Yeah, yeah. So I think like
customers you saw always come in and just set up. When I first started, I didn't know you did plumbing. And you'd have like a basic profiling. And then I'm always a firm believer, and Si would back me up on this. Like, if we had, if you've, you know, invest in some stock, right, then get behind it, then customers will see that, yeah, and they see that you're serious about it.
Yeah.
And then if you keep, you know, you keep banging the drum about it, then that's when they'll go, oh, boom, what's past that? Oh, I could do with one of them, or I didn't know you did that. So I think it's well, it's you got to, you know, you have got to kind of do like a bit of a leap of faith, really. With
it's listening to customers as well. If you've not got something, the good thing is with us, we can always go out and get it, yeah, then give the customer a ring and say, that we didn't have, we've now got it, come and get it from us.
I think,
would you put yourselves up against any specialist merchant in the towns that you, yeah, operate in?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's like a service knowledge, except today.
Yeah.
And product range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a rage.
Well, it's like now, it's like John's constantly loading new products on. Like even last week, you put 5-6 on for me, just for me alone. Mm. So do you know, everything is constantly changing.
I think from a product point of view as well, you know, there is always something new coming into the plumbing in the industry. Press-fit fittings, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought that would have took off the way it has? But with plumbers now working in buildings where they can't use flames, solder stuff.
Yeah.
They've become more and more popular over the last, what, 6 or 7 months?
Yeah.
Everybody's using them now.
Yeah, when we've got a healthy profile, we've got a healthy profile at press. And I think it's years ago, I think I always remember some plumbers saying to me, like, years ago, even before my career, be saying, when like the plastics come out, like Speedfit, everyone used to probably say, that will never catch on.
Yeah,
but it's surprising how much, you know, stuff's changed like over the years.
Do you want me to touch a little bit on Fortis and what Fortis offers us in terms of supplier range and price? Because without it, we couldn't play in the plumbing field, could we?
Absolutely not, no. Fortis is really important to us, Paul. Fortis is an organiser, you know, it is the biggest buying group in the UK now. It's 2.1 billion pounds worth of turnover. It's 45 members now, 230 odd suppliers. So suppliers actually see us as an attractive alternative to a national, because whatever happens in the industry, in the marketplace, they can't stand still. So they need volume too. And I think that's where they see a buying group as being really attractive. And more importantly, mixed merchants within the buying group, because they know that's where specifications are born, the co-orders. And that's what makes them so attractive to our timber, because we're not the biggest, from a P&H point of view, we're not the biggest member in terms of P&H. But what they do like about us is our builder customer base, and they're more than happy and willing to work with us with that.
How do you see that builder customer base rather than the plumber? Do you see the builder driving more specification around what's needed, or building regs pushing the builder to need different options?
It's a bit of a mix, really. But to be fair, you have. It's like saying Grimsby in any branch. There's different kind of builders. Like, you know, the odd ones all do your extension, and the ones all do your 5-6 plots, and that things change. But I don't know. I touched on it earlier, but like I said, the main thing is when it comes to like specification. What we find is they'll bring a drawing in, or they'll bring a spec in. They'll go to normally his manager or someone in sales, like to do the takeoff of that. And then a lot of the time, because we've got that relationship, they'll go right when they've done what they need to do, can you have a look of look at the plumbing side, or look at the bathrooms and so on and so on, and look in, and then that introduces us to the plumbers, or even might be dealing with them already. So to be fair, it gives us a really good foot in the door for it. I think every builder's going to be different, and to be fair, every job's different. So
Ryan Grimsby Sound.
Yeah, I mean we do all sorts of bits and pieces. We do deal with a lot with sort of the smaller builders and one-off. We have some bigger builders, but again, it's plans come in, they get sent off in different directions, and then we deal with our side of it.
What do you reckon your split of businesses, builder to plumber within plumbing?
Probably 70-30.
70% plumber.
70% builders, 30% plumbers.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd go with that, yeah.
Yeah. As much as that.
Yeah, Mev.
Do you think that's the same in a specialist plumbers merger now?
No, because they'll just solely just have plumbers on there. And I know obviously me and Si, we've been looking at relationships, what we've built. Obviously we managed to, look after a lot of customers who still trade with us, but being able to gain new ones with the builders,
yeah,
where we go or join anybody who comes through the door with that. But yeah, I'd say the split is, be 70-30.
So when you're looking for new customers and, yeah, positive and proactive,
yeah,
do you go for plumber first or do you go for builder?
Plumber.
And then
plumber. Yeah. You do plumber. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
But even with that, he's still 70% driven by builder.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what we find is it's like some of the builders what we've got, 9 times out of 10 we know the plumbers.
Yeah, you do.
And to be fair, sometimes with like one recently found out by accident or the plumber, and I'll be honest, I didn't actually know who it were. And obviously they trade with me quite a lot and they didn't really mention. And then when I mentioned it to him, he says, "Oh yeah, it's obviously I'll be doing these houses." So, which is great because you've already got the relationship there. It's just, just getting yourself in front of builder and just trying to assist them. But that's a bit, Si will agree with me on that. It's a massive thing.
If we had someone in the other day and he'd come in for a price on some plasterboards and talking to him, realised he did a lot of refurbs. Yeah. So by that, we've got him in and he's opened an account up and now we're chasing for work.
On the plumbing side of it,
yeah. But they do buy materials for the renovation bit as well.
Do you think suppliers, plumbing and heating suppliers, make the most of our connections with builders? If 70% of our business is driven via builder at the start, do you think our suppliers understand that and capitalise on it enough?
Yeah, I think, the way we heat our homes now, Paul, is changing massively. And some of the new technology that's out there now, like air source heat pumps and that such like, it's scary stuff. They don't understand it. And the builder rely on us now to hold their hand through that project, especially if you've got to, tick boxes with SAP calculations and stuff like that with air source heat pumps, solars, solar panels. They know now that we can actually help them through that process. And so they don't tear that page out, the specification, and hand it to somebody else now. They actually hand it to us. And I think our suppliers know that. We build our suppliers around that thought process, and our suppliers are more than happy to hold and guide us through that.
So when we make our decisions on who we use supply-wise, obviously it's product and price, but on top of that, it's
the service that they offer
the
us.
The ones that can help us.
Yeah, help us. Because if they can help us, we're helping them. So, it's perfect harmony, really, between merchant and supplier. And quite a few suppliers have picked up on that quite quickly and more than happy to work with us.
Yeah, okay.
And hold a hand through.
I think the good thing is if a supplier comes who's got time to come and see you, you just make time to listen to what they've got to say. Because a lot of time there's some information that you could pick up on.
Yeah.
Are you now really seeing that change in heating systems and the move to renewables, or are you still saying others?
The thing is, I think like 1 or 2 years ago, it's like even I'll probably say from weekly to monthly, it's just rapidly to be fair, it goes in one direction to another, because obviously if legislation's changing, the regs are changing slightly, which to be fair, when you speak to some of the lads who are doing, or no, a few of the lads who are doing the air sources quite a lot at the minute, it can just goes from one end to other, and it's constantly like that. But I think it's more driven by the government.
Are you seeing more requests?
Absolutely, flooring. Yeah, because obviously any new plans they've been governed. They've got to go down that route. So, and it's changing rapidly.
Sam, what are your day to day plumbers, engineers who are coming in? How are they grabbing all the renewables? Are they afraid of it? Are they concerned that it's impacting?
I think a lot of people are just still fitting boilers, that we sell lots and lots of boilers.
Yeah.
A lot of people doing training, but it's getting the inquiries in. That's what they're doing. It's I think people worry that the price of air source and what it is and what it's going to cost if it's going to be efficient enough. That's what people worry about. They think they're sticking the red that they need a gas boiler. Yeah, and that's the way.
Are you seeing the jobbing heating engineer starting to fit the odd air source heat pump, or is it the jobbing heating engineer sticks with gas boilers? I think they leave the air source.
I think they're more sticking with the boilers at the minute, but I think it will come.
I think you've got the odd ones who will happily go down it. The thing is, like John was saying with the suppliers, like them wanting to help us, they're doing exactly the same with the engineers. They're going like, look, come to our training centre, we can guide you through it, help, and even come out like on first one, like help commission and walk through it. So they're doing a lot as well. I think more suppliers, like John said, they are cottoning onto it. They're doing a massive thing of trying to help. I've always thought it's weird, because when I first started in merchants, I always used to find underfloor heating. Everyone used it. Very rare people would do it. They were a bit frightened by it, like too complicated to fit. Now everybody can do it now. It's become
the norm.
It's become the norm, yeah. It's because more suppliers do it. Trainees, they've simplified it so much. It will only go the same with air source. I think, the thing is I think it's something completely new. And it's like anything. I always, like I said, coming from when I first started in an independent, it's a complete different. It's completely different to national. It can be a bit daunting.
No, it can.
It is a bit weird. It is a bit different.
I think the thing with air source heat pumps as well is, whilst it's topic of conversation now, wherever merchant you go into, you end up having to, from an end user perspective, you have to manage people's expectations of the units, because I think people think that it's just a direct replacement for a dirty gas boiler. But a gas boiler would heat a room within 20 minutes once you turned it on from cold, whereas air source, it's more like 2 hours. And I think when people spend all that money on an air source installation, they're a little bit disappointed with the performance of the product. So there is an element of managing people's expectations of the units. That, coupled together with a shortage in MCS accredited installers, will only compound the problem even further. So, yeah, it, like Simon was saying, I think it will come. I think it will take over the world at some point, of how we heat our homes. Yeah, watch this space, because I think it definitely is going to take off.
Well, to be fair, we're recording an episode with Tuplins, aren't we?
Yes.
In a few weeks' time, specifically talking about heat pumps. And one of the things we've asked them to come and talk to us about is myth busting. Break some of the myths that people naturally think about it, because it's interesting. Right. We're going to start drawing this little bit together now. I'm going to put you two on the spot. Right, so gather yourselves.
Try and do better.
See, they're still there. Oh, that's your daily. Not really out.
Phil has a go.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
Go on, I'll go first.
Right, you go first. So you think now while he's fumbling through his answers.
Let me get me know.
And you can't copy his answers.
Oh.
Give me three reasons why a plumbing heating engineer should choose dealing with a builder's merchant rather than a specialist plumber's merchant.
I believe it's the staff that's in there. We give good service, and we've got products availability, and we've got our own personal delivery vehicle.
So split that into three. That was just one big one.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah. Service and stock, a range of stock.
So people, service, range of stock.
Yeah.
Both plumbing and heating and the associated.
Yeah. Products. Everything that we've got, the one-stop bit there.
Okay. Is that your three?
Yeah.
Good luck for you.
I know, yeah. Well, there is one. What he has,
he's just stole your thunder.
Yeah, he has. He's kind of ruined it. No, price, because I think we are very competitive against anybody. And I'd only just hit home with the staff. And he has done me.
Sorry, Mike.
No, I know. I should have gone for this. Should have told me earlier. What are you on?
Well, let's make it even worse now. John, give us three reasons since why a plumbing engineer should choose a builder's merchant.
We have a countdown and timer as well.
Oh, yeah, 4 meters special.
I think our ethos as a business is to try and get a different angle into a customer than any other merchant. And I think, going on the lines of a one-stop shop, I think is absolutely fantastic for a customer, because that saves him a whole host of money traveling around three merchants to get what he wants. So there's a cost saving there for the customer. I think the product offering, I think we've got an in-depth product offering for the general jobbing builder who wants to have a go at a bit of plumbing, yep. Plumbing the washing machine, all the way up to full central heating installation and bathroom installation. So I think we've got stock in depth. I think to back that up as well, we have the backing of our suppliers, which I think is really important because they're an extra set of eyes and ears out there, what's going on in the marketplace, local towns, they bring inquiries to us as well.
Do we make enough of that supplier offering, do you think?
Back in my day, when I was a branch manager, I used to love it when suppliers used to come and see. Because back in them days, they just used to do a milk run. They just used to tip up your branch. But I always had a rule that if you want to see me, then you've got to give me a nugget of what's going on out there. And if you didn't have that nugget, then I wasn't going to see you. And I think I built a reputation on that. And so every time they used to come and see me, they gave me information.
Must have to buy your biscuits.
I think now in the fast-paced moving world of merchanting, I think our supplier sales force are overlooked. And I think we dismiss them, whereas we really need to embrace them. Because in this market, especially this year, we're just moving into a new financial year now. The market is going to be tough. We know it's going to be tough and we need all the help that we can get. Yeah. And suppliers, if you're willing to work with them, they'll give you it back twofold.
Brilliant. That's a good way to wrap it up. And I was amazed that you've got three still to talk about after these two had taken the easiest. So to draw the podcast to a conclusion, we always finish with some quick fire questions.
That's so great.
Here we go. I think you always love these.
But we do them at everyone.
Yeah.
And I have this ambition to write down all of the answers from all the podcasts and turn it into a little book. Well, it might be a PDF.
Monetary value, yeah. It'd be selling, yeah, in branchy. So please make them very wise.
Yeah.
We'll go three questions, two each. The most favourite part of your job and the most difficult part of your job?
Favourite part is the staff I work with and the customers that come in. I just love it. I love talking to people.
All right.
Difficult?
I think frustration sometimes getting suppliers that we need, the odd supplier that we don't deal with. That's
so the getting from access to supply, yeah. Outside of,
yeah, what outside of what we do, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, it's good.
Favorite and most difficult.
Favorite, just with the customers, you know, talking to, having a laugh with them, the banter side. It's I get hit really hard with them, not just staff, but with customers. But I still think I still think a lot of them just deal with them, not because of what I know and how I price them. I think it's just so they can just take the make. But again, it does. You can have a really bad day, you know, feeling like it's going to be a bad day. And they just, and to be fair, they do actually cheer me up.
It's good.
Even though they give me some accelerate out of it as well.
But that's the important part where you play for customers, because our customers are often working on their own.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah. So I think they must all save it up, for, yeah. Especially for me. And the worst thing is, you ring up a supplier, you ask if something's in stock, yeah. You order it, and then they tell you it's not in stock. And then trying to race around to try and find alternative, or if customers booked a job in and there's no movement to do it. I absolutely hate it. On top of with the suppliers, with pricing, you price it, send it, and then it changes. It's just...
You'd like to know where you are.
It's a mind freak, because again, if you've done all the legwork and checked something and went, oh, we've got X amount in, oh, plenty, that's fine. And you order it within the next half an hour and went, oh, no, we've gone down the house, we've checked and we can't find it. And it's like, you speak to a customer, I booked the job in for next week, and it's like, it's not going to come. Oh, no, I need it, I booked it. And it's like, oh, no. But in the end of the day, obviously, it can turn, it's weird, it's the worst thing I hate about it, but also can turn into a really good positive, because it's being able to sort it. And I think a lot of us customers think about, that's the worst thing about the job, if you can't get something done.
But it gives you the chance to show off how good you
think. A lot of it is down to the rather deal with us how we sort problems out than we're supposed to.
Right. No. Good. John, yeah. Favourite part, worst part?
I think the favourite part for me, Paul, is, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it's our people. You know, I said it right at the very beginning that I've worked within the merchant industry for 40-odd years, and I can honestly say, hand on heart,
I work with some incredible people within Howth Timber. They're very talented people. They know their stuff. Didn't matter whether they're sales execs, you know, lorry drivers.
Plumbing managers.
And I also work in a team of incredible people too. We all bounce off one another, both marketing and category team. We all get along together. We share ideas. We get stuff across the line. So I work with some incredible people, so which I'm lucky.
People's your favourite? Most difficult part?
I think the most difficult part for me is people listening, and I'll leave it at that.
Not plumbing managers moaning and groaning, just can't have a different supplier and you can't have a different product.
That's not us.
No. I think we churn out, I'm not sure if churn out is the right word, but we pull out to the business a lot of information. Doesn't matter whether it's plumbing, timber, building products, shop products, whatever. We pull an awful lot of information out there. And the frustrating thing, and an awful lot of work goes into that. An awful lot of man and woman hours go into that project. And people don't listen.
Yeah.
That's the biggest. And they're missing the trick.
Yeah, by not listening. That's a good one. The most crucial characteristic you need to be a plumbing and heating manager in a builder's merchant.
Charm and wit. Of which you have at the Bundys.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the best answer. In 40, it's wrong. It's a good
answer, but it's wrong. Yeah.
Matt Boone. Follow that.
Charm and wit. I've heard it all now. You have to edit that bit out because that's not right. Knowledge. Key thing.
Should we just go back to that question at the start?
Well,
who patented the first flushing toilet?
That's the past. We don't need to worry about that, man.
John, crucial characteristic to be a category manager for plumbing heating in a mixed builders merchant.
I think you have to have thick skin. Various jobs are put my direction about plumbing and heating, and it's called various things. So I think definitely you have to have thick skin, and you have to give as good as what you get. So yeah, that would be my answer to that.
Okay. And then the final question for you, Wills. You're nearly there. You nearly got through this. We'll start with you, charm and wit.
In a bundle.
I know.
Yeah, the best piece of advice you've ever been given. And that's quieted you down.
Oh. Listen to what people tell you. Take it in and use it correctly.
No, we're not having that one because you're just repeating what he's just said for what frustrates you the most. So you have to get another one.
Come back to me.
Ben.
Paul is causing problems there.
You are causing problems. Yeah, well, sweaty perms.
I know.
Your dad must have told you something because he was a wise man.
Was he?
No, sorry.
Do you know what? It sounds really that. When I first started, they used to give me, it's going to sound daft, they used to give me like brochures of certain suppliers.
Right.
And they used to say like, research a system. And get to grips with it, build tickets. And I know it sounds like it's like I was thrown in the deep end. I think if you get thrown in the deep end, then you probably, there's so much information there, but just work through it. And I think it's always held me in good stead with that. It's going to sound really like weird and cheesy, but they also gave me the polyfied brochure. And the second day I started, they went, Learn Molson because they'll help you in the long run. And do you know what? Even though we ain't got a polypipe here anymore, I still write stuff in my book.
With polypipe codes.
It's helped me out. Everyone else,
WP11.
WP11, waste pipe.
That's 1¼, 32 mil foot.
CP2, obviously, should be too many.
Again, but it's weird because it's helped me out. So massively, just by that as an example, it's been huge.
Just being the last one, John.
I think the best bit of advice that I could, that I was told very early in my career was a guy that said to me, he said, this industry is built on trust, John. If people trust you, you'll go far, you'll go a long way. He says, and if you ever want to know how much you can trust somebody, tell them something ridiculous and see if it comes back, because then you'll know where it's come from.
Very good.
And that's always been in the... I've used that even today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one, that is.
That's why we scratch his heads, don't we?
Oh, now, so he goes
out, we now we know.
No, but we do. We are an industry of trust. And
yeah, we are. Absolutely.
I think it's learning
time.
Yeah, you do. Customers remember
a
few mistakes, how you deal with
it. Yeah.
I think that's the key.
Was that your piece of advice, Chapman?
Well,
have you got another one?
Yeah, no, I think it's learn by your mistakes and be honest. Yeah.
Well, I've now got a load of people in our timber saying to themselves, did John Houston ever tell me something ridiculous? Because I can't remember.
Well, I'm just thinking the previous few emails, yes.
Yeah. We're ridiculous, yeah. Not really like sense, yeah.
I think listening to you all with them all, they are really good in that around learn by your mistakes, and you really can get some wins out of demonstrating to your customers when you made a mistake.
Yeah, something's gone
wrong.
Yeah.
How you recover it.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah.
You tell the truth.
Don't get me wrong. Sometimes they'll be either angrier or some of them will just be, calm with it. Mm. But at the end of the day, you don't need to ask them afterwards, is everything all right? Because you'll know, because they just carry on trading and carry on like normal.
Then you put it right.
Then don't you? But then every now and again, I got it over a week off one in, and dropped a couple of jobs on me like last minute to do, but I did best I could, got as much as I could sorted with him, and he just said, "Oh, no, we do appreciate it if you do all that." And to be fair, it goes a long way.
Nice.
Yeah, it is nice. Well, but yeah. Do you know what? You saw people I wouldn't expect it, but I don't mind because they still keep trading.
Today as well, take absolute mick out of me as well. So again, it goes back to that earlier. I think that's a good thing in life, isn't it? It's sometimes it's the tiny little thing.
It's the biggest thing in a lot of business.
And then you get me ringing you at night doing the same.
Yeah, exactly. And then John gets it as well.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Both of us.
No, we said earlier it weren't us. Yeah. We said it weren't us. We're quiet.
Right, Matt Binney, we're going to have to call it quits here, my friend. I'm looking at that clock and we're into about the third hour of your stomach stories.
All right, that's all right.
So I'm going to draw it to the close. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Yeah,
for your time. I hope you all enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been good. So this is Charmin Wit. You've now got a new nickname.
He's going to melt there.
Oh, yeah.
Wait for his email signature will change.
That's Mr. Charmin Wit.
Yeah.
So listen, the three of you. Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. I'm pleased you've
tomorrow.
To you, our viewers and listeners, thank you very much for joining us again. If you've enjoyed it, a like and subscribe would be good. And if you can spread the word about the podcast to anybody else who you think might be interested, we'd really appreciate it. That's it from the four of us. We'll see you all again soon. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Harold.
Bye.